Hi, MWTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we're here with...
Chris Nelm, founder of Listen Local First, co-founder of the Funk Parade, board member of the Whammies DC, and programmer for Kingman Island Bluegrass Festival.
And all around, nice guy. And...
I'm David Posnansky. I play in the Washington, D.C.-based band Easy Sleeper.
Awesome. Easy Sleeper. Don't sleep on those guys.
Indeed.
Awesome. Well, we wanted to have you guys come in here. Actually, to peel back the curtain, we did a big, big music piece on, you know, interviewing Seth Hurwitz and, you know, the big, big venues in town and you know, the Anthem and 930, all that stuff. And it was, is D.C., you know, the big booming town? And while those venues were pleased with it, these guys wrote and said, you know what? Those are the big venues. Those are the big, you know, touring headliner acts that are coming through, you know, the massive superstars. But... we should do a follow-up piece on DC as a local, like the local musicians and how the city is that. And I said, you know what? Let's do it. So thanks for coming in and talking about it. So I guess you want to start with Listen Local first. When were you founded and, you know, what was the why behind it? What's the mission?
Sure. I'll talk briefly on Listen Local First. I mean, Listen Local First was a music initiative that was created in 2011 with the purpose of creating alternate avenues for local music exploration, finding ways for fans to connect with new audience, finding way for audience to find out really about what's happening on the local scene, and creating partnerships between local musicians who actually are local businesses and other people in the local business community. Because as we grow as a community of local supporters, you know, these sort of connections, partnerships really mean a lot and can help both the local businesses and the local business who are musicians grow and, you know, support their platform.
You guys a nonprofit or are you guys a...
We are an initiative of Think Local First, DC, which is a nonprofit.
You're like an offshoot of that. Okay.
Yeah. And then out of Listen Local First has grown a number of events and festivals that we've grown with and organized. Like I said, the Kingman Island Bluegrass Festival, the Funk Parade. I do a music policy forum conference at Georgetown. We've been doing it for the past 3 years, focusing on music policy that other cities are doing around the country and sort of bringing people together from all these other cities and introducing them to people in D.C. and talking about how we can share ideas and what we could do to grow, what other cities are doing to grow to support their local music economies.
All right, cool. So that's the basic breakdown of Listen Local First. We'll go into the whammies and everything else in a minute. But just circling back to sort of how we started off the interview, you as a local musician, David, everyone sees all the... you know, the marquee names, the big touring acts that are coming here and the big venues like the Anthem that are opening up. But why for you, speak to a little while, why you even wanted to come in and talk about this. How in your view is DC from the grassroots local music scene? You're in a band yourself.
Absolutely, yeah. I wanted to kind of highlight the different voices and different sounds of the city that are coming from authentic artists and DC people. And whether those artists are playing at house shows, smaller venues, bars, they're sharing their art and there's a sense of community and building each other up. That's really beautiful and powerful and elevating artists to the next level, which is something that, you know, some of the larger venues may not be aware of necessarily, but there are some very talented acts in the city that call Washington, D.C. home.
List some of those acts for me, if you don't
Absolutely.
Mind.
Absolutely, yeah.
Who are some ones to watch out for?
So some acts on the rise right now, and I'm sure Chris can add to this list quite a bit as well. Some of my favorites include Yesferatu, Weston Smith, Misunderstand Me, Taciturn, Footex Coles, and then there are some jazz artists that, again, Chris is more tapped into that scene. I'm more in the indie rock, DIY rock scene. Sure. But jazz is still popping off in D.C., and it should be celebrated.
Yeah, so historically, you know, you think of D.C., you know, history-wise, you know, jazz and go-go, and, you know, but what are sort of the burgeoning genres? Like, if you took a snapshot of more of the underground scene right now, the grassroots level, what genres are really popping off? Are we folk? Are we funk? Are we...
Well, so this is you touched on something really important. It's sort of when that article came out and it was about DC music is booming and focused on the major venues, you know, DC music is go-go, is funk, is jazz, is punk, you know, is a lot of experimental underground stuff that's happening. And that is not always reflected in the largest venues. One, it's a business. I mean, it's a business model thing. But we're talking about, you know, I would say right now, some big things that are happening. There's a lot happening in the experimental world. There's a lot happening in the underground indie world. There's a huge DC hip hop scene. There are more hip hop artists coming out and actually performing with major national acts and collaborating with them than probably any other genre.
Do you want to list some of them?
Right now. I mean, Inanna James is the big guy right now.
Footex Coles.
Foots and Coles. You know, April Viss is more. The other thing is Neo Soul. You know, there's a lot happening in sort of the younger Neo Soul, funk, jazz, experimental jazz world. And so that's, you know, traditionally, you've had some of these big venues, the venues that are focused on rock and punk. And one thing you hear from a lot of artists in these genres we just mentioned is like access for them, access for the hip hop artists, access for the neo soul artists, you know, access for the more experimental jazz artists. They don't have the access to the major venues. Their bread and butter is the local venues, is the small jazz clubs. And if you compare what the article said in terms of what you wrote about the large venues growing and all these pretty places popping up. Right. I mean, you've had over the last couple of years, before the immediate last 2 years, you've had, you know, the loss of Bohemian Caverns, the loss of HR 57, all these places that used to host jazz and DC's music and go-go, you know, venues that hosted go-go. You've seen them disappearing. In the last couple of years, you've had Marvin, you've had Soto, Bin 1301, a number of places, especially around the UC area, that are picking up on the jazz scene and really they're having like amazing jazz jams probably 5 days a week. So you're seeing that growing now, but it's only been within the last year or two that that's reestablishing itself.
Right.
So that to me is a huge thing for the DC music scene, you know, having these venues come up, having people realize that, like, you know, and I was telling David this, is that if you look at the DC music community, and I really don't mean to offend anyone here, but like the jazz community are, you know, a lot of musicians in a lot of genres have, you know, have supplemental incomes. They work bars, they work other jobs, they work real, you know, they work at office buildings, you know, other things. And a lot of the jazz community, these guys are working musicians, full-time musicians. Yeah, they do some of them do education, you know, they teach. But I mean, real working musicians is probably across a genre, it's the most percentage of musicians that make their full-time living from music in DC. And that's impressive. I mean, that shows, that's a real scene right there.
Absolutely. Well, you listed a couple of them, Marvin, and the rest, but let's go more into the venues, you know, all over town, not just U Street. I mean, you can list some of them too, but what are some of those venues? If we're looking beyond the big flashy stuff that's popping up, if we're looking down at the roots level, what are some of the venues that our listeners should be paying close attention to?
I wanted to highlight venues that find value in having local artists advance their sound, find a larger audience, you know, grow with the music scene, as opposed to, you know, popping in and playing a show and then leaving.
Yeah.
So some of those venues, Songbird Vinyl Lounge, you can grow as an artist there. You can make your way from the Vinyl Lounge to playing downstairs to a larger audience. The Pie Shop on H Street supports local acts. They have a diverse lineup. They treat people professionally. They want your act to sound good. And in that environment, you can grow as an artist and grow your audience because you sound great live. You prepared, you know, you should be dealing with people that treat you as a professional.
Right.
A couple others, Dwell, a great house venue, and Epicure in Fairfax, Virginia. Again, focusing on the idea that these are safe spaces, these are inclusive spaces where you are comfortable as an artist to share your best work.
I would throw in Rhizome in Tacoma Park as well, especially for the more experimental music. They're an amazing venue, and yeah, I think you named Dewdrop Inn is hosting a lot of interesting shows, you know, almost all local music. So yeah, those are some great examples.
And how are you how are those, let's say, you know, more local, quote unquote authentic, smaller venues, how is it sustainable? You know, we've seen Black Cat, you know, shrink down to one floor. You said, you know, the Cavern's closed. What is their, do they make, do you even know how that works in terms of, are they, making money off the bands coming in, or is it more from the restaurant and the rest they do, and then they just open it up to the bands?
Well, I'm not going to talk necessarily to the business, sure. You know, to the business models or, you know, their choices.
Why is it worth the value for them to have?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's the same thing. I mean, you have an outlet, you have the opportunity. You know, most venues like the Black Cat will have a mix. They'll have national acts and they'll have local acts play as well. It's a lot of the venues don't necessarily own their venues. You know, they're renting and they're on long-term leases. So that's, you know, they have to deal with the issues of rising rents in their neighborhoods, which is you know, problematic, and we want to make sure. And a lot of the work Listen Local First has been to sort of help the local venues sort of get over this. I want to cite one piece of legislation. The Capitol Hill Jazz Foundation, which is Aaron Meyer and Herb Scott, they proposed legislation through Councilmember White a year ago, about a year and a half ago. It was called the Performing Arts Promotion Amendment Act. Wait, no, am I getting this right? Yes, it's the Performing Arts Promotion Amendment Act, which essentially gives a tax credit to small venues. I believe it's like 300 cap if they're having music 40 hours a month or more.
Cool. Yeah.
They can get up to $10,000 or $15,000 tax credit for the fact that they're hosting that music. I mean, you get into bigger issues there where the city... When the city says we want to support local music, you know, the mayor's cultural plan is out there saying preserving culture, preserving more spaces for artists. You have to look at, you know, what are we doing? Yes, it's
tax break would be a way to actually do it.
And things like this, you know, supporting legislation that's going to promote more small venues to host live music is super important. Then you run against the other gamut of issues where it's like there are lots of restrictive clauses where in certain neighborhoods you can't have, you know, neighborhood associations have decided you can't have live music. So even if you have this tax credit, you can't have a live music in this. So it's we ask Listen Local First and the music task force that we've been working with asked that, you know, the city still has a lot to do to look at the music scene overall and assess the needs from all aspects in order to grow. And yes, it's more venues, but yes, it's also providing resources, infrastructure to the artist community.
Awesome. Well, that's sort of, I'm so glad you mentioned that because that's the tangible, you know, policy that they're trying to push. But so that's sort of like the local government side and the, you know, the working with the venues, that kind of a thing. From the band perspective, I mean, my fiance's in a band, so I'm starting to see this a little bit up close. Thankfully, you know, she can make a living at it and piecing things together. But from a band side, is it able in DC, if you're a local band, if you've been on the scene for, you know, a couple years, are you able to make a living at it?
So part of the Washington, DC area is a lot of people come here, you know, for jobs, or they come here to go work in the government.
Right.
So, yes, there are people that come here that say, I want to, you know, be an artist in D.C. And Chris spoke to that, jazz musicians that are making their mark. A lot of the people I run into in the scene, they feel like they're doing two things at the same time, which is working their job, trying to excel with that, but then trying to push their art, trying to celebrate other creative artists. And again, share spaces with people that are pushing boundaries musically and creatively. And those two things, you know, can happen at the same time. There are enough hours in the day, but the support of venues and the support of people like Chris that advocate for artists is critical because, you know, resources and, you know, making money at a packed gig, that helps your band move forward. Mm. You know, sounding great live, that helps your band move forward. And there are people and places that allow for that to happen, and we should celebrate those. And other, you know, people that are maybe lagging behind should join the conversation and reach out and see how they can support local artists.
Question is, does that alone afford, can you afford the rent, and can you afford to put food on the table with that alone? And I think that's where you judge. That's where you begin to really judge the music scene. It's about affordability, livability, places to work and do your art. Because if you need to, and look, there is a large, you know, I see bands that David are talking about, you know, in the indie community that are, you know, a lot of them have other jobs and are trying to do their music. I see a lot of artists who are from DC, you know, living in DC, you know, doing their music, also, you know, really trying to just scrape by right now because it's hard. And when we talk about the strength of the scene, say the music scene is awesome. I mean, we need to take a scale back. Just because there's a shiny new building and mm-hmm. a shiny new venue mm-hmm. does not mean the artists that are from DC, the culture of DC, right. are surviving. They're right. barely scraping by. They're needing to move out. They're needing to move out of DC to survive. And they're moving up. A lot of them moving out to Baltimore because it's so much more affordable.
Down here.
Yeah. So that's the real litmus test on sort of how the scene is doing. Like, can you live here? Can you sustain a life as a full-time musician? The answer is increasingly no.
So your answer is more no than yes, or it's they're barely scraping by.
Unless, if you want to do art full-time.
Right.
You know?
Right, as a full-time artist.
Yeah.
And again, that's not just music. That's, you know, I come from a movie background. That's local filmmakers,
right.
you know, that work a day job and you're trying to do their art on the side or painting or whatever. I mean, theater.
The theater scene from the work I've done in sort of across the board, DC has a burgeoning theater scene. Yes, but there is a lot of independent theaters that do have that issue as well. But I would like to see more resources being thrown in the way that we support our theater scene, because theater is a stronghold. We have a lot of excellent theater that's comparable nationwide.
A lot of the stuff that comes from here goes on to Broadway and wins the Tonys. I mean, all right. Well, staying on topic of the music, do you want to talk about the Whammies a little bit?
Sure, sure, sure. Well,
celebrate the music.
So some people that may be listening are familiar with the Washington Area Music Awards. First of all, I have to step back and say, there's this organization called The Musicianship. They are a DC nonprofit who has been growing for the last 10 years. They do mentorship and free music education for over 1,500 youth in the city. And they are really a powerhouse. They have been working across schools in the district. They work with the Washington Youth. They've taken over the Washington Youth Choir. I spoke with them, and they are now taking on the stewardship of Funk Braid, because Funk Braid used to be all volunteer run, and we were lacking a lot of the resources, staff, board, to be able to sustain the festival into the future. So Musicianship took over the Funk Braid, and right before that happened, they actually spoke with the Washington Area Music Awards, and the Washington Area Music Association has been kind of folding up over the last couple of years, and they had a board member in common, so they brought the board member brought it over to the Musicianship, and the Musicianship agreed to resurrect the Whammies. And so this is the first time in 3 years that the Whammies is coming back. It had been happening for 30 years. It was a celebration of DC music. And so it also had been, you know, their offices were based way out in Virginia. So they weren't necessarily hitting a lot of the younger local acts, and people weren't aware. It was a membership organization, so you used to have to pay mm-hmm. to be a part of it. Now, with the Whammies under the Musicianship, it's going to be March 30th and 31st. It is 2 days of celebration of music. There's a conference at Decades Nightclub on the 30th about, you know, what, you know, being in the local music scene, what it means to be in the local music scene, what resources are available to you.
Right?
Yeah, it's in DuPont. And then on Sunday night, there is the Whammies, the award show at the Lincoln Theater.
Cool.
And there's actually news today. Today, the nominations are being released online at whammiesdc.org.
Okay.
I want to make sure I have that right.
Yeah.
You can see all the nominees and all the categories.
And when's the award show again?
The award show is March 31st.
Okay, cool.
March 31st.
Okay, cool.
And so we ask, anyone can be a part of this event. You don't need to be a member like you used to be in the past. We're sort of resurrecting the brand. I'm happy to be part of the steering committee. But I think we hope that this is going to be a resource and a way to amplify sort of the DC music community going forward.
You said that their nominations are already out just today?
Today.
Do you want to run through some of them for me?
I don't have it up. I've spent all night sort of...
It's okay.
You know,
what's the equivalent, or what are some of the categories? Like, what's the best picture? What's the best record of the,
It's all by genre. You know, okay. It's best artist band, it's best album, a couple categories where there were more nominations have best song category.
Right.
But it's, I mean, there's jazz, go-go, rock, hard rock, you know, Latin,
And they come up on stage, they get a certificate or a...
The award show will be like every award show. There's certain categories the most popular will probably be the ones we presented, but then the winners will be announced or listed there on some of the screens. But there'll be some performances from some of the artists as well. Not necessarily the one. The performances were set before the nominees and the awards. So there'll be performances from some of the artists that are very relevant and up and coming in those categories.
How much do you think if everyone comes here, they can like plaster that on their Facebook page, winner of this? Do you think how much? I guess it's still speculation since it's the first year back, but how much do you think that'll drive people to come to their shows?
It does rhyme with Grammys. Yeah. So,
whammies and Grammys.
Just pointing that obvious thing out.
Yeah.
So I don't really know. What I think it's going to be is it's a way to celebrate DC music across the board. And so it's a way for people to access, for someone who's coming in, who doesn't know much about the scene, it's all about how are you, it's hard. DC, we've been losing local press that's solely focused on music. So the outlets, you need to skim, W2P does some music, City Paper, all these other sites are covering some music here and there. But like,
we need to get a music critic in here. I've been beating that drum for years. We have lots of sport. We have a really deep staff of sports reporters, and I'm the one entertainment reporter. I got my master's in film. I'm coming from it from that angle. So I have people come in, and I defer to you guys to to tell me what's going on. So I'm pounding on that to get a music critic.
So we hope that it'll be that sort of an easy entry. Like if you look up local music, you look up the whammies and you see last year's nominees, and that gives you like an easy entry point to see who was nominated, who won, who are some bands you should check out. And I think the board, Brian from DC Music Rocks has been very involved in sort of the process and how we're making it fair and how the judges have been involved. So, in the past it had the whammies had had a knock on that it was a popularity contest. And I think we took a lot of steps to make sure that it's not just whoever told their fans to vote in, to put as many nominations in as possible.
Yeah, so votes? What are the judges?
The voting was open to the public.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Everyone can nominate a band. And then the judges were, there's about 50 judges across the, I would say hand-selected, though. It's the people that are most involved in the specific genres, like people that are either writers, people that are work with different venues, people that are knowledgeable about the music scene, and sort of everyone got together and sort of went through the nominations, and there was a formula that they created, sort of who from the nominations end up making the finalists, and then the judges went through, the 50 judges went through and did the voting for the winners in the categories.
And the nominees were just posted today. So how long can people vote between now and when?
The voting for the nominees was done. That was ended in February. So now it's the process.
And now it's the judges.
Now it's the judges.
Gotcha.
The finalists are up.
So the public's not picking the winner. They're picking the nominees and then the judge. Okay.
Yeah.
That's your stopgap, or that's your
against the popularity contest.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of cool. It kind of combines both. It's a it's a democracy, but then at the end, it's like now we're gonna have the experts, pick the winner. That's pretty cool. Do you guys have is there a category to highlight a venue, a local venue?
There is actually a.
Because I think that's important.
Definitely.
There is a, and I'm blanking right now, there's like the general interest categories that are sort of for most, artists who's the community builder, venue who's most supportive of the community. There's a couple of categories, and I'm blanking on those off the top of my head because there's a general interest category up there.
Do you guys want to really fast? I know you said you wanted to just touch on these, not go too far into them, but do you want to hit really fast the events you guys have listed on the website, like Kingman Island and Funk Parade and Music Policy Forum?
Kingman Island's happening on May 4th. The lineup just went out last week. We're super excited about that. Funk Parade is happening May 11th. We are working on getting the lineup out. By the end of March, the lineup for Funk Parade will be out. The theme is keeping the funk alive. So, we generally ask for people who, artists, musicians, who want to get involved. The parade is like totally free. Anyone can participate. You want to be part of the parade. You want to build a non-motorized float to represent your interests in music and the city. You can do it. Bring your dance group out, make your costumes, come be a part of the parade. It's also something from the article, going back to the article, you know, I think there was someone from the National Chamber Orchestra, National Symphony Orchestra,
talking
about how,
from the Kennedy Center, NSO.
It was the NSO.
Well, yeah, but he was representing the Kennedy Center. Yeah.
Right. And so I find that really interesting because the Kennedy Center has funded Funk Parade for the past 5 years now, and they're really all in on, you know, funding awesome activations, whether we had projection mappers, dancers, fire dancers, DJs, brass band. Like, I'm touting something I do, but, you know, it brings a point. Like, look, this guy says we should bring in these artists. Like, it's great. I'm glad you're able to bring Nas to perform at NSO.
Right.
But that's not creativity. That's right. I have the money to bring in Nas to perform at the NSO. I mean, if we focus less on, you know, money in replacement of creativity, we focus more on sort of taking that money and putting into what the creatives are already doing, which Funk Parade is 250 stakeholders, all artists coming in and creating this spectacle on a day. If the money went into something like that, we would have Meow Wolves, and not Meow Wolf, but that representation of what a Meow Wolf is, all over the country, and every single city would have their own spectacular thing that you can see that's unique for that city.
Right.
And that's the way we build creative economies, not necessarily, you know, the people with the money up top making the decisions, because they're somewhat out of touch of what's happening on the local level.
Right. Well, I guess sort of we've covered a lot. One of the cool things I saw on the website was you had a playlist there. So how do you guys choose that, and what are some of the bands that are on
actually,
there?
Actually, we got David was on there for one
you
of
were
his
on there?
Projects.
Yeah,
last year on one of the playlists.
I have a project called King Leisure, which I'm going to be releasing music in spring, which is coming soon, Washington D.C., 2019. So Chris put me on his playlist, supported a local artist that released, you know, music that was authentic to me. And I appreciated that, and I appreciate seeing other artists being represented in that same way, you know.
Do you log on there and discover new bands all the time based on that
playlist? Yeah, I've discovered bands, you know, through, you know, Spotify isn't necessarily going to show people local artists. So having local playlists, having, you know, Listen Local First, advocate for artists is critical.
And where else do you go for that? I mean, I know Nationwide, there's like Pitchfork and that kind of thing. Rolling Stone, I guess, used to be. But like, what is there? Is there any local?
There is a bit.
Where do you keep tabs?
Yeah,
I guess?
There is a bit of piecing it together. I mean, there are resources, Washington City Paper. I find stuff, you know, just seeing what the chatter is on Twitter, following a lot of DC music people that way. I talk to people. I go to shows, and people, if you want to find what's great in local music, go to shows, take a chance on a show, see what Facebook recommends to you, see what your friends are going to, and, you know, go support the scene.
So it's more word of mouth and social media than it is any sort of trades nowadays.
I will say you've got Hometown Sounds now, you know, like the City Paper, DCS does some stuff. You've got, I apologize for anyone I...
Capital Sound DC.
Yeah. Capital Sound
Probably
DC.
Probably a lot of websites.
Well, not that many. I mean, DC Music Download was a very big one, and they had to fold. Recently, we had Bandwidth, which was associated with WAMU, and that shut down. So those were really hyper-focused on local music, and those resources have gone away. So now you've got a couple podcasts, a couple smaller sites. Oh, DC Music Review is sort of stepping in, although they also do a significant amount of national coverage, but I think they're doing a really good job of focusing on local. But yeah, there's always someone coming up, and I always said, if Listen Local First, if we had actual resources, maybe we would take that up. But right now, I mean, it takes money, it takes funding to keep a news outlet focused on anything.
And how do you guys put together that playlist? I thought that was really cool. I mean, it's not only you go to a website and read, you know, mission statements, you can actually
all
real
DC
time,
artists.
Listen. Yeah, yeah.
All
so
DC
so
artists.
It's I mean it you know, I spend a lot of time sort of just perusing what's happening, what bands are out. I follow all the artists. Every time I find out about a local artist, I follow them. So whenever they have a release, actually, Spotify is good at that. It tells you if you follow the band, when they have a release, it pops up on your weekly music stuff. So But, you know, just reading articles, plugging them in. If they've released an album in the last 3 months, they make it on that quarterly playlist. So right now, I think the winter playlist is up pretty soon. By the end of March, we'll probably have a spring playlist. But that playlist is updated. Like, I just added 2 tracks on yesterday.
Nice.
You know, so there's always, whenever I come across an artist that released new music, we'll add a track to the playlist. And so it doesn't have to be, it's not... Really, you have to be a DC DMV band that put out music.
It's not just DC proper; it's Maryland, Virginia, just the general area.
Yeah, and I'm not making any decisions on this is good or this whatever. This is my what I like, what I don't like. This is DC music. It's on Spotify. They've made it. If you want to check it out, if it's your thing, you know, it's your choice to follow them or do whatever.
Right. Now, if there's people listening to this that want to get on the playlist, do they reach out to you or no?
No. Email listenlocalfirst@gmail.com. Message us on Facebook, on Instagram. Just let us know. Hey, I put out a release in the last month or two. It's on Spotify. Yeah. It's got to be on Spotify because we only, a lot of bands are putting out stuff on SoundCloud and Bandcamp, but unfortunately.
But you're curating it on that.
Yeah, you're doing it on Spotify. Yeah. So as long as it's on Spotify, it's been released in the last couple months, we'll add a track.
Awesome. From the music side, I assume now it's, talk about sort of the, you know, because you're not really cutting, you know, the days of demo tapes and then, you know, actually recording actual CDs, albums is over. So I assume when you said you're going to put out a new album, is it streaming? Is it just instantly available?
Right. So digital distribution is a big, unknown monster in the room. How do you do it?
Wild West.
Where does the money all go, really? Yeah. And there are resources available for independent artists, CD Baby, TuneCore, that will help you get your music up on these platforms. And what's important is when they're up on there, how do you get them heard? How do local resources point people there? If an artist released, you know, a cutting edge album in DC, hopefully you would hope that would be in, the Washington Post or WTOP. Right. And I think that is starting to happen a little bit more, and getting, you know, national eyes on the scene and getting local eyes on, you know, and ears on what's going on.
Now, I guess my question is, when you're, let's say you have the new thing coming out in spring, are you, from a band's perspective, are you going to play it live first? Or is it before you post it, or is it kind of a simultaneous thing nowadays? Extremes while you tour it, quote unquote, around the city.
Yeah, some bands will go out and play the record because they're sharing, you know, a bit of, you know, the process, what they put in, you know, what they poured into their work. And also, as you know, I'm sure you've seen with your fiance, there is audibling, and to create a real special live show that connects with the audience, you don't go up on stage and, you know, play the right notes. You build, you know, a sense of community and shared space in the room. And maybe that involves a little bit of jamming, definitely does with jazz. Maybe it involves, you know, creating moments between you and the audience. And we know that happens in rock all the time.
That's why you got to play off the little wedge. You can't have the earpiece all the time. You got to see, I'm learning the lingo.
Yeah. I mean, no bands are doing an Ashley Simpson, you know, I queued up the track wrong. They're all live and they're all authentic.
Do you guys play with the inner ear monitor, or do you got the wedge?
Is Ashley Simpson the new Millie Vanilli?
I totally forgot about her. Yeah, was that Jessica Simpson's little sister? I don't know. No, I didn't mean lip sync, but you know, people have they can hear themselves in the ear, or some. Are you a playback guy?
Yeah, I use earplugs when I play, so maybe when that day comes when I'll have the in ears, or I'll actually be able to hear.
I love it. All right. I mean, I think we've covered a lot of ground. Is there anything else, you guys? Any other, you know, while we have the mics rolling, any other points you want to make or things you want to plug? Or
well, we appreciate you for having us in. What it comes down to is that the initial reaction to that first article is not that we love the fact that IMP is here, and IMP is IMP, and they're not Ticketmaster, and they're not Live Nation, and we have our own powerhouse in DC, and there are different versions of ladders that different venues are doing, like allowing musicians to climb up. But the music scene, and especially like going out to the policymakers, the people that are creating change, like we've got a strong focus, at least like a verbalized strong focus from the mayor that says, we want to support arts and music in DC. And the way we do that is start tackling the issues of, housing, more performance space for artists, like smaller performance space, livability, workability, and stuff like, you know, lots of house venues have been shut down for random reasons, not dealing with sound because they don't understand the house venue is not really a venue. Mm-hmm. You've got issues with parking, you know, artists getting parking tickets outside of venue.
Right.
DDOT has taken away temporary parking for vans and stuff like that. We need loading zones outside of venues. There's lots of things we need that can help the music venue grow. That involves the policy in the city that it can actually make DC a more friendly city for its own musicians.
Right.
So I just want people, and I want, you know, the government and the people and even the venue owners to know that, like, we're doing good, but we can do better.
Right. And you just mentioned the IMPs versus, you know, the more smaller. Is there any crossover there? Is there any let's say a big act comes. I know a lot of, like, the really big people will bring, you know, their opening act that tours with them. But aren't there moments where I've seen places where they'll have, like, they'll invite a local band on to be the
opening act? Yeah. DC9, Songbird, Rock and Roll Hotel, increasingly so, are leading the charge, and others should take a page out of their book, see who's playing those venues, maybe even go see, you know, what's going on if these acts are professional as they are. And yeah, put them on at 9:30 if there is room on the bill, and, you know, implore you to do so.
To me, I think that would be the best. I hate to use the word compromise, but you know what I mean? Like, is to, it would give exposure to these people.
Right, right. And you die from exposure. It's, you know, but that's,
yeah,
that's,
well,
that's another thing. I mean, yeah,
well,
no,
is
no,
that
no.
The whole, like, no,
no,
selling out conversation?
No. But I mean, exposure is, you know, it's not just about exposure, but that is very important. But you know, the decisions, it's not, IMP probably would put on local acts if they could, but it's not, and they do when they can, but
right.
It's a lot of it is driven by the industry and the booking and the agents that now build full three band touring acts. So there's no space to add on a local band if you've got a three band tour touring across, you know, making its way across the country. I mean, that's it. The label has taken three of their bands, or the booking company's taken three other bands
and preset
it. So there's just no room, you know, that's just the way it's moving. So there's less room for that added local act.
Right.
But for, like, the bands that are touring through DC9, like you said, Black Cat, those venues those are bands, single bands, maybe one or two bands. There's a room to add a third opener or something like that that's local. So you see more of the local openers in those venues.
So if you take a 9:30, I don't want to say Anthem because that's just massive now, and they get those huge headliners. But if you take, like, a 9:30, how many of those are, this is literally a learning process for me.
Yeah.
So how many of those in a month on the 9:30 bill are national touring versus local, would you say?
I'd say less than 5%
is local
representation.
Really? Wow.
I'm not gonna comment on that until I actually run the numbers.
Sure.
But
it's
probably it's a handful a month. I think.
You.
Yeah.
Whereas venues like you're talking about, Rock and Roll Hotel, Black Cat,
Songbird, any night of the week you can go to the Vinyl Lounge, catch a free show.
It's pretty much, you say it's pretty much 95%, 100% local.
There will be local representation on most nights, and so, you know, if you have a packed house, that packed house could get, you know, they could learn a new band. They could get to know someone that's making music in their scene. And yeah, there is, I guess, cognitive basis behind the figure I just gave.
Yeah, sure.
But it's more so, again, imploring, if that was the number, let's try and bump it up.
So from a band side, then, I know it becomes sort of a catch-22, like you're saying, like, you want to drive fans and exposure, but then there's a level where, you know, it's overexposed kind of a thing, or selling out, quote-unquote, or whatever. What is it? I mean, as a local band, are you trying to play these gigs and get noticed so that you then move up to a 9:30? Or is there a point where you're like, oh, no, then I'm...
Well, I want to quickly just, like, walk back the exposure thing. So what a lot of people in the music industry tend to do is, like, oh, you play this event for very little money, but, like, you'll get exposure.
Right.
So that's what I mean by exposure.
Pay
is, like,
play.
It's not that every band wants to get on the 9:30 club. That is not a selling out thing at all. It's just that, you know, a lot of people use the term exposure has been played out in terms of, like, exposure is what happens when you sit out in the cold and you die, but it's not going to put food on your plate. So a lot of people
I'm with
try
you,
to.
Man.
A lot of
where's the money?
Exactly. Where's the money?
I gotta survive.
So that's let's just, like, reterming exposure.
I know
so
what you mean.
Everyone wants. Any band would love to be on that 930 Club stage.
And there is a model for, you know, local acts that have, you know, grown to a point where they're sharing their music nationally, they're acclaimed, and they're sharing their spark. So acts like Snail Mail, XX, Priests, those acts will be able to, you know, bring their audience and bring a large audience, sold out shows at 930 Club. Right. And that's special. And, you know, again, finding those ladders and finding the resources within DC government and, you know, the actual stakeholders is important in helping make sure, you know, more acts are bringing their voice to that.
And for your band, just personalize it a little, just so as an example, slice of life. How many gigs would you say you play around town a week? Is it more like a weekend kind of a deal?
Yeah. So right now we're playing, you know, 3 to 4 shows a month. You know, it varies. A couple times you play two shows in a week.
But then you have your rehearsals and all that.
Yeah, it takes a lot of effort to, you know, bring a sense of professionalism and take your art seriously. You know, whether that's rehearsal space renting, whether that's recording, whether, you know, you're putting the shows together yourself. So it takes a lot of effort to take yourself seriously, but it's worth it because you're sharing your art and you're sharing the space with people that are also passionate about what they do.
Let's say you've just formed a band and you're starting to get a little bit of, you know, you've recorded enough that you're ready to do a live show. How do you even get in these spaces? How do you get into Songbird? How do you reach out to Rock and Roll Hotel? Like, how do you even get put on the stage there?
Definitely. So part of it is, you know, you play these kind of entry-level venues and you start to, you know, grow in real life with the community and with the scene here. So whether you're playing shows at venues that, you know, are dingy bars, you're meeting other bands, you're meeting a touring act, maybe you meet a band from Baltimore, then you go play out there and you build your community from there and you build your sound from there. So
and I would add that, you know, you as an artist are part of a bigger community, like you said. So you're going to shows. So you see a band that you like, you know, that are playing these venues, you ask them like, hey, next time you do a show, can we open for you? You know, so that allows you to build your connections, that allows you to, for the venues to know about you. And sort of it's a process sort of. There's, if you're a singer songwriter, it's different. There are lots of like open mics don't really pay, but they're ways to meet other artists. There's stuff like if you're a songwriter, there's like the 9 songwriter series. So you can hook up with the 9 songwriter series and play a show with them and then sort of meet more artists. And it's really about growing your community in DC. DC's small. It's not, it is a very small, it's still a small music community. Everyone kind of knows each other. So, or can know each other if they wanted to.
If you put yourself out there.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thanks for coming in and fielding all these questions, whether they're basic or complex. I wanted to cover it because a lot of our listeners, you know, probably don't know the ins and outs either. So I wanted to hit it from all angles if we can. Plug the website. How can they find out more? Get involved?
Sure. ListenLocalFirst.com. I mean, a lot of our stuff happens on social media. Listen Local First on Facebook, on Instagram. Then we've got Funk Parade. Obviously, funkparade.com, Funk Parade on all the social media networks, Kingman Island, and then whammiesdc.org and whammies on social media.
Awesome.
And I have a new festival coming in the fall, but we haven't announced it yet. So
that'll be coming out. Can you
tease
it?
Can't give
any.
You don't
have to say the name, but.
Give any. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be sort of. It's going to be a fall festival. Yeah.
It's in DC.
It's in DC.
What else can I try to pry out
of it? That's all we got.
I got some.
Are you
going to
be at it? No.
Yeah. So Easy Sleeper is playing Galaxy Hut March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. We're playing Smith Public Trust March 19th with Rico Triste, Drip Kiss, and Weston Smith. And yeah, go support the local scene. Go check out local bands. And yeah, thank you for your time.
That's another venue, Smith Public Trust, to put on there.
Totally.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming in, guys. I have it flew by because I have 45 minutes worth of material here.
Awesome.
That's enough for a set. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. There you go. Cool. We played a whole set. We're just going to hit play, and this is your whole playlist next month.
Nice.
All right, thanks, guys.